Yo guys, welcome to another episode of The Target Table. Today on the couch we have Dennis.
Hello.
For all the people and listening and not watching, hello.
The team and I were having a bit of an interesting chat during the week and just debating back and forth like all the possible things that can be argued to be brands.
Yeah.
You know, it does seem like sometimes, you know, you would imagine a brand is purely just a company, but people are brands, athletes are brands. You know, we even debated our countries and landmarks and cities. Are they brands? Fictional characters, you know, holidays, events, times and moments in life, like these things can, in a weird, inadverted way, kind of be marketed and branded.
Yeah. We've been geeking out on it and it's become like the trivia topic of the team this week of like, do you think that's a brand? Is that a brand? Is that a brand? But I think the thing for me is you just don't realize that branding is everywhere.
All the time, always. And oftentimes unconscious. Like even if, you know, a good example of that is if you just go to the supermarket and you're looking at, you know, buying baby food, which one do you buy? But what's happening to your unconscious mind? I'm talking about baby food because I got kids.
I was going to say that.
you guys pick
something that's like, when you're buying baby food, I'm like, I don't think I have.
But yeah, let's imagine you're in the toilet paper section. Like what makes you choose what toilet paper? You know, are you looking for 3-ply, 4-ply? Are you looking for soft? Are you looking for cheap?
What price.
I was going to say luxuries.
I'm looking for that 3-ply, man, you know, so it depends what you want and how they brand it and how they talk to you. So one which I was looking at, and an interesting one, which is if you look at the, I guess, the franchise space and you look at a character like James Bond.
Right.
Right.
Everybody knows James Bond.
Everybody knows James Bond, but like what people imagine him as is this character in a movie, but... If you own a like a watch brand or a car brand or a champagne brand, there might be a good reason that you would want to pay the producer to try to have your product placement with that character.
Right.
So therefore, arguably, I would say a character, a fictional character, like whether it's Ron Burgundy or or James Bond, like brands look at these characters as vehicles to position next to their product in order to persuade people to buy what they have.
Right. Because I guess branding evokes emotion and a character also evokes emotion.
Yeah.
And in branding, it's all about owning something in people's heads. And if you think of specific things that then link back to that fictional character.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all leads to them having a brand. It's like a personal brand. If James Bond was a real person, he would have this personal brand look and feel and theme, right?
Yeah. So if, I mean, I would define James Bond's personal brand as like suave, cool, sophisticated, mysterious, maybe bold and masculine. And like, he's got this like, you know, he's involved in espionage and it's got this British MI6 cool factor to it.
Right.
So if you have a brand, let's just say like, you know, some of which that have been seen in the movies are like, I think it's Omega, the watch brand. Is that the, am I getting that right?
Omega.
And Aston Martin's another one. There's a big list of different brands that have sat with him. That's
I didn't think like that wasn't a conscious thing, but the second you just said Aston Martin, I'm like, James Bond. The James Bond brand.
There's a subconscious affiliation with a thing. And what I feel is happening here as a strategist is they're try to unconsciously link things together that you have an affinity toward and use that as a marketing ploy to get you to buy something.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, like when you break it down, there would be things that are off-brand for them too, right? Like I'm picturing James Bond. Imagine if you put James Bond in like a Christmas sweater.
Or Crocs.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, right? Yeah.
Crocs. That'd be awesome.
If you look at his archetype, he's like this suave, cool, sophisticated character. So then you would need a suave, cool, sophisticated brand to make sense in his universe.
Yeah.
That's not Crocs.
I don't know, man. Like maybe
I don't think Crocs existed when James Bond was invented.
It would stand out in the movie.
It would.
It'd be off brand though.
But yeah, I think, you know, like if you look at his brand, like this is the interesting thing about James Bond. Like different actors have played that character. So it's kind of like, you know, arguably it becomes this IP that transcends generations that companies can partner with for a long time. So like by default, Aston Martin kind of get this, you know, moment in time where they're kind of like timeless and cool because of it.
Yeah.
And I guess like each iteration of James Bond has its own atmosphere. Like yeah. they do change it slightly.
But I think the strength of that brand is why they can have these new generations and they can get new actors.
Yeah.
Because the brand itself is so strong. You can then go, okay, now it's Daniel Craig. But as long as he's placing himself within that brand
yeah.
and taking on the characteristics of the James Bond brand, yeah. it still feels like James Bond.
Well, that's a good point. Would you say like James Bond every decade gets a brand update?
Well, yeah, I was watching something about Sherlock Holmes last night. Mm.
Oh.
Sherlock Holmes is always, well, the original iteration, he was quite mean. He wasn't a nice guy.
No, he was a dick.
So I don't know if it was the second or third company to do their own iteration of him. They started making him nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Sherlock Holmes IP is over 100 years old, so it's no longer copywritten.
What?
But the nice Sherlock Holmes is still copywritten.
Yep.
So any iterations of Sherlock Holmes that come out now have to be nasty.
Really?
Until that 100 years ticks over, then they can start doing
that.
Imagine
arguing that in court. Like, hey, sorry, you used Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, but he's a dick, so it's fine. Like,
Proof he's a dick.
Well, it's one of his main characteristics.
Can we give him to a brand? Can we build a brand and be like, hey, here's your mascot at Sherlock Holmes. Isn't he already taken? No, we're just going to make him say some mean shit and then you're fine.
Just going to make him insult people all day.
Yeah.
But like on that note, do you think that James Bond, because it has so many iterations, there could be a similar thing where, I guess, the original James Bond has less of a, I guess, copywriting grip than all these new iterations that they update, add things to.
I think James Bond has got more progressive over the years.
Yeah.
Oh, well, like Winnie the Pooh just became...
He's transitioned recently.
Winnie the Pooh just became 100 years old and they made the Winnie the Pooh
horror movie. Have you seen it?
No. What?
Has anyone... bro, you've got to watch it.
Wait, pull us up.
It is legitimately the funniest movie I've ever seen. On the floor laughing. It's not supposed to be funny, but like,
so
they knew what they were doing. So bad it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about
same. Yeah. Yeah. Steamboat Willie.
Yeah.
That's
saw
the
that.
One.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They released a slasher movie from the same company.
And this company, I think I saw they put something out where they're like, here's a list of all the ones we're gunning for as soon as like, as soon as the trademark runs out, it's ours.
It's 100%.
Wait, what's the production company?
Why have they not done Sherlock Holmes?
Look up Piglet in this movie. Piglet from that movie still haunts my dreams.
When did this come out, dude?
Last year? I want to say like 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh, my Lord.
It was 2013.
23.
Wait, can we watch the trailer? I want to see this.
It's so funny. We watched it and I was using the Woody from Toy Story filter from Instagram that turns your face into Woody and putting that over the top of this. And it was the most cursed thing in the world.
Soon will be Christopher
Mary Robin. Bro, Z grade doesn't even cut it. If there was a letter after Z,
that's so funny.
Wow,
it's so bad. You should absolutely watch it though.
Yeah, but I love how like I guess you could. What would you call this? Like a recycled brand?
That's
like
it's a revamp essentially.
Yeah.
It's they've just taken a brand that has fallen out of, I guess, copywriting IP, and they've just went sick.
I wouldn't go as far as saying this is a rebrand. It's like the official writers of Winnie the Pooh are like, you know what? We need to do something fresh.
Yeah.
Everyone's growing up. Winnie's growing up. Let's just change his angle.
Yeah. He's a serial killer.
But I guess the question is, does it affect the brand?
No, not at all. Because I guess it's Winnie the Pooh's got so much that... I feel like when people look at this, they instantly go, that has nothing to do with Disney.
Yeah, adults do. But like, imagine if you like, Dane, imagine you're watching this and Harlow walks in and sees it on the TV.
Yeah,
like,
it's going to ruin it.
Winnie the Pooh, gone forever.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
If it was still trademarked and copyrighted, there's no way they would let them do that, which is why they're waiting until all the IPs run out.
With the different iterations of James Bond, do you reckon that's like different IPs in itself, or do you reckon that with James Bond it's still keeping it to the same?
I think it's still the same archetype, like, but just obviously the Pierce Brosnan era, if anyone remembers, is a little bit more fake or a little bit more...
Everything was more exaggerated.
Yeah, it was really exaggerated and it was kind of... A little cheesy. It was a little blockbuster esque, and it really played into the video games.
Yeah.
And then I guess the who's the new guy?
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig. It felt way more realistic. It's like with the Batman series, right? You had the 90s version of it, and then you've had the remake.
The real old one where it was like very camp.
West. I think it's as movie production has got better, they're not like there's none of this. I'm trying to oversell it to make up for the lack of production around me, right? Yeah. It's like the Daniel Craig one just is a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But have you guys seen like the original James Bond movie?
I think the first.
Do you know what it's called?
Was like the Die Another Day, but that's.
I think look this up. I might be wrong here, but the first one I believe is called Octopussy.
I think
it's one of them.
I know that is a James Bond movie.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I reckon
it's the first one.
I reckon that was. I'm gonna guess the third.
I'm gonna say fourth, just to be different.
Dane's betting first.
I would have guessed third, but I can't do that now.
But even that title wouldn't fly.
No.
Like, I feel like James Bond, I mean, what's it been around since the 80s?
The movies.
It would have been earlier. 70s, yeah, I reckon 70s.
I feel like it's from earlier, man. 60s.
The books, definitely.
First James Bond movie.
First one.
1962.
Wow.
Dr.
No.
Dr. No.
I've never even heard that name.
Really? Dr. No?
I've not even heard
Can
of
you
this
fact
one.
Check which number Octopussy was?
It's the Sean Connery one.
Yeah, there's got to be like a nice list of like...
Yeah.
Isn't there like 40 or 50 of them?
There's a silly amount.
There's a lot.
Yeah. I saw it in this like the JB Hi-Fi one day, and the box series was like that long. It's huge.
Yeah. It's a bit ridiculous.
It's like a Mary Poppins handbag keeps popping out. Oh, is it number 8? That would make...
That would make sense if it was number 8.
Yeah.
Why didn't we guess that?
Yeah, let's do James Bond films. Okay, Doctor. I don't know if you can zoom in.
Goldfinger's 3.
Oh, it's not number 8.
Whoa.
Okay,
so how consistently did the films come out?
It's the 13th.
Wow.
So 62, 63, 64, 65. Pretty consistently.
7.
Every year or
9.
Two.
Yeah,
so
for like 20 years, it was almost every year or two. That was
the Marvel universe.
What makes the brand work?
I think, I don't know, it's a timeless archetype. It's
the spy, the espionage
spy.
Is it desirable? Do you think it's people wanting to be James Bond?
I think it's one of those things where like this is a generalization, but every guy wants to be him, every woman wants to be with him, kind of character. You know, like
particularly back in the 60s when that was very traditional.
So, yeah, I'm not saying that's the case now, but you know. Yeah.
What quote?
The every guy wants to be him, every girl wants to be with him. Is that a James Bond movie quote?
I didn't know that was a famous quote. I thought that was
it is from
Dane
something.
Walker 2024.
No, it's from... Yeah. That's not my quote. It's from somewhere.
I've heard that before. So.
I'm not claiming it. okay, so let's just say every 2 years, is there any substantial gaps in any of these
89
dates?
To 95.
89, that's it. That's 6 years.
Right. And I assume it
okay,
back
so
as
then look
actor.
Look at the actor, right? So who's the first actor of the James Bond film series?
Sean Connery.
So Sean Connery, and then Sean Connery goes away and then he comes back.
Comes back for one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they had a falling out.
Yeah.
Broke up. And they
have they ever done like a Spider-Man like crossover? Like, I'm James Bond.
No.
Like he just shows up in the Marvel universe. Yeah. Like.
There have been like theories where the theory is where James Bond is a code name and it's a different guy every time.
Yeah.
But nothing to tie it together.
It's like the one story that goes
So if James Bond is a code name, what's 007?
Also a code name.
It's like Inception of the James Bond code.
Yeah. Well, that's where the theory falls apart, I think.
Okay, so let's look at James Bond as a fictional character, would we define him as a brand? Because from my perspective, he has a logo, he has an identity, he sells merch, there's video games, there's books, there's a whole universe, he's an archetype. People want to buy the stuff he wears. So in the recent film, Skyfall, he was wearing Tom Ford.
Right.
So Tom Ford's sales skyrocketed. He wears Omega watches. So people buy the Omega watch because they're a fan of James Bond.
Yep.
If you see yourself as that cool kind of character, you want to drive an Aston Martin. I guarantee if I worked at MI6.
Here we go.
Very believable.
I would for sure be repping an Aston Martin.
I think that would kind of
just purely go against
espionage.
It is the most spy looking car as well.
It's very British.
There's that quote. One of my favorite movies is Looney Tunes Back in Action.
Wow. Yeah.
Nice. It's so good. Great and there's movie. That Daffy Duck quote in there where he's like, you know how I know that it's a spy car? Because it looks absolutely nothing like a spy car.
That was perfect.
It's pretty accurate.
Thank you. I've watched it many times. But an Aston Martin looks absolutely like a spy car.
Yeah.
Because of James Bond.
But is that because of James Bond?
Yeah, branding? I think so. For sure. We were laughing about, I literally made the joke about is 007 the brand. But what if this is like a meta thing and James Bond isn't the brand? James Bond, imagine he's a real person.
Right.
And then 007 is James Bond's brand. Mm. And maybe off camera behind the scenes, James Bond is just a normal guy. And then that's his brand that he's putting on when he becomes 007.
You're hurting my brain, but I
understand. This is like inception layers of this.
Well, okay, let's actually unpack that. Just if you look up James Bond, I believe is it's from a book that a real spy wrote.
From the 50s.
From the 50s. You know your stuff when it comes to literature. So
let's hope that's true.
What date, Dennis?
53.
Okay, so Commander James Bond. His name was actually James Bond.
It was 1953.
He's a genius.
Wait, his actual name is James Bond. So he wrote the character after himself.
No, he's a character from Ian Fleming's book in 1953.
Commander James Bond, CMG...
is a character.
Oh, okay. I read that wrong. I got way too excited. Okay. Created the British journalist and novelist Ian Fleming in... 19. You need to zoom in. I can't read that.
Commander James Bond, wearing glasses CMG, and I can't read it. Is a character created by the British journalist and novelist Ian Fleming in 1953.
Yeah, but what's his story? Wasn't he involved in espionage.
He was involved in the war as well, and he based parts of the character off Christopher Lee, who was involved in espionage.
Look at him. He looks like James Bond. Check him out.
Yeah, so this was an authentic brand. He based it off people that he knew.
Okay, so he kind of personified himself as a fictional character.
And people he knew, yeah.
Do you think he engineered this character in this book because he knew that that's what people wanted to read? Like, it's like he engineered a brand and he knew people would buy into.
One of the themes I always love in branding is like this peek behind the curtain. Like, there's so many brands out there that have this perception that things just happen. And when I'm interacting with a brand, I love this, like, oh, there's real people behind it. And like, I'm seeing it behind the scenes. I think that is what the appealing factor of James Bond was, is that no one gets to experience what being a spy is like. No one knows what it's like to be an MI6 because it's such a secretive industry.
Right.
Mm. So I think what then popularized James Bond is people like, oh, I can step into this world now. And now I know what it's like to be in MI6.
It's like fantasy.
Yeah.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
It would be way more immersive, right?
Secretive.
Yeah,
you don't have the internet to go. What is a spy?
How
do spy?
Was espionage
a day in the life of a spy vlog?
Would you say that he kind of pioneered the espionage book writing space?
Going to assume so, based on name another espionage book a series that you know of.
It's definitely the most popular.
Jason Bourne, but that came way after this.
He was kind of a different type of spy, but great book too.
Yeah, so when I was looking this up, yes, we had Omega, we had Tom Ford, we had Aston Martin, there was a champagne company.
He was drinking martinis, shaken not stirred.
Did Heineken pay them shit tons of money?
I'm going to assume they would have to, surely.
Yeah.
And it was worth it because here we are talking about Heineken.
See if you can find out how much they made from the appearance. That'd be interesting to know. But like, okay, so I don't know. I would say that it feels from my assumptions of this character that was invented by Ian Fleming, which is that James Bond has been around for a long time. It's still prevalent and maybe it goes away for a little bit, but it always seems to bounce back and become relevant again. And it's always like re-engineered through a new producer's eyes, rebranded with a new actor, and they kind of fuse the actor's strengths into the character's strengths, and they make it, they kind of reignite the universe every decade or so.
But as the decades go on and as that changes, if you say to someone James Bond, there's still those ownable brand features in your head that you come to. You're like, I've been picturing a spy in a suit, you know, driving the Aston Martin and which being is branding. Suave. And that's branding. That's so what you're
visual owning. Recall, you know, having some kind of emotional attachment, you know, being attached to a story, connecting with a character. These are all brands or brand traits. So like if anyone could take anything from this, it's like, you know, hell man, everything's a brand. But let's unpack that a bit more. We were talking about another one, which is a bit of a strange one, which is like events and holidays.
Yeah.
Are they a brand?
One sec before we go on to that.
Yeah.
What do you got
interesting
for us?
Fact okay. is Heineken's been a partner of James Bond since Tomorrow Never Dies in 1997, but he actually never drank the beer until Skyfall.
Wait, what?
Wow. They did marketing. So they've done outside of the movie.
They've done marketing where they've done advertising using James Bond on their ads.
Okay.
Right.
But and it had been advertised on the films, but he had never actually drank it until the Skyfall
film.
Do
you think that Heineken would have wanted to be in the film? But do you think that whoever was managing the franchise IP was like, dude, that's off-brand
because he drinks martinis? It doesn't feel as – drinking a beer doesn't feel suave.
No, nah, like, not at all.
He's got the famous quote, the martini.
Yeah.
Shaken, not stirred.
You can't have your beer shaken, not stirred.
All right, so whoever wrote the brand guide and whoever produced this film broke the brand guide.
Yeah.
For a lot of money.
Ripped it up. Yeah. Got paid for it.
They sold themselves out and it was probably worth it.
100%.
But yeah, segueing back to what you mentioned, Dane, something that we had come up with in our in our list of when we were spitballing and saying what else is a brand, the one that I found the most fascinating is just the fact that it's literally everywhere is holidays. And I was chatting with Cam and Cabe about this when you guys weren't here because we wanted to do a little fun little exercise. We speak so much on the pod and at Rival about branding being a visual thing, being a copy and strategy thing. Something we haven't touched on a lot is sound branding.
Right.
We've spoken about it briefly. Like, you know, you think of Netflix and you think of the dum-dum.
Yeah.
Like you hear that noise, you're like, that's Netflix, right? What I found really interesting about all of these holidays is that sound branding is so heavily featured in these to the point where it's not just like here's one sound that they own. It's like a whole genre of music, specific sound effects. And the second you hear it, you will know exactly what holiday we're referring to.
Right. So if you hear that kind of like wobbly sound, like I don't know, you see that in a lot of like cheesy adverts and stuff like that.
Well, let's,
okay, we're playing a game?
If you want to play these. We got a couple of examples, but like it'll take you 2 seconds to be like, that's that holiday.
All right.
That's,
so without looking at the screen.
Oh,
okay.
I won't look at the screen.
Okay.
Sexy time.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Lit.
This is definitely like a Halloween.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
And like that's a Billie Eilish song, right?
Oh,
Billie
is it?
That's a Billie Eilish song.
Billie Eilish was not like, I am going to brand Halloween, but like.
Is it called
Halloween? Hear that chord. And then we have one more, which is a very obvious one.
Christmas.
That's all you need for that.
See,
one.
Like 1 second
I'm
of
ready.
Each of those, right?
And you're ready
like,
open presents.
I feel, but it comes back to that thing we're talking about in branding, like being this immersive feeling and it evokes emotion.
Yeah.
You hear 1 second of that and you're like, oh, here's my positive major chord and my jingle bells and my sparkly tones. I'm feeling jolly. You know, this is Christmas. And
yeah, I think, you know, music is one of those things like we do a thing in our workshops where we ask clients, like if your brand was a song, what would it be? And it rattles people because they're like, I don't know. Like it's such a hard question to answer, but you hear a sound and like, even when you play that Christmas one, like half of a second, I was seeing people in the morning ripping open presents, happy as just with a split second. Cause it, when you hear a sound audibly, at least for me, my mind immediately creates a visual affiliation or an association to that sound,
which
you know, is branding. If you can plant something into someone's mind with a visual or, you know, a feeling or something that they can relate or connect with, that is branding.
I think what I found interesting, you know, it was the first one that came to mind for me is what's something that people don't usually think is a brand that's everywhere. But the more I dove into it, I was like, they're using every branding feature you can. You know, we often talk about the hierarchies in branding and you've got things like your fonts, your colors, you've obviously got your name, you've got your story. Christmas as a whole has literally anything that you can think to tie to a brand. It's like music, smell. You think of the smell of gingerbread or Christmas trees.
Cinnamon or like a hot cocoa.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a Christmas smell. You think of what's their branding colors. Red and green.
Yeah.
Like you see that anywhere. It feels like Christmas. You think of fonts, like they've got the really nice, like cursive, smooth, warm, welcoming fonts. There's a whole story to it. It's got their brand story. It's got this tone of voice that's this warm, welcoming, giving. You know, there's traditions that go along with it. There's dances, there's songs, there's just anything that you could ever use in branding to own space in someone's head. Christmas has that.
Yeah.
And I think what's so interesting is it's not like there's a company behind the brand of Christmas. And probably what makes it so big is that it's public domain. Anyone can use Christmas and capitalize off it.
Yeah.
Realistically,
you can like that's every what Christmas is about. Corporation on the planet for like decades have like taken those elements, those colors, shapes, textures, and deployed them in marketing. It's almost, you know, companies will jump on these events like Valentine's Day or Halloween or Christmas and use these as vehicles to drive their message. And, you know, if you have billions of dollars being poured into a market and a season every time of the year from every company on the planet, they're all kind of using this as a almost like a brand collaboration pack. You know, like a universal
let's collab with Christmas.
Dude, Nike should do that. We're doing a Christmas collab drop this
year. I'm sure they've done that.
Can we do
Can you just look it up? I'm sure. Nike Christmas collabs.
But also to that point, it's all intentional because red isn't inherently Christmassy. It's because somebody at some point decided, let's make red Christmas or let's make Christmas tied to red. And eventually that's what it is.
This was something I researched because there's this started off as a fun fact that everyone... It's one of the most commonly known fun facts, which I've actually debunked today when I researched it. But it's often told that Coca-Cola invented Santa Claus, or at least, you know, commercialized the red Santa Claus that we know.
Right. From St. Nicholas or whatever it was.
I did some looking into it today and I found a really interesting site that had like the history of illustrations of Santa. It was actually an Australian artist in 1901 that illustrated Santa as we know it. Yeah, there you go. Santa's Australian. Dude. It's like, you want some fucking presents, mate?
Time to throw a shrimp on the barbie.
I think I saw the exact article you saw when I was researching this week.
But also, to your point, shrimp on the barbie is also a funny one that's been branded because we don't say shrimp here.
Yeah.
We say prawns.
Yeah, that's true. Actually.
That's right. So if you're in the US, we never say shrimp. We say prawn. Prawns.
But no, the Coca-Cola one was a perfect example of how a company then took the story of Christmas and capitalized off it. And there, it was 1931 and Coca-Cola had a reputation for only being a summer drink. And they went, how do we change that? How do we get people to drink our drink all year round?
Mm.
And at this point they went, okay, we've seen a few depictions of this Santa Claus character in red. That's our brand color. What if we just fully commercialize that and own it and make Santa this mascot for Coca-Cola in the winter, in the snow, dressed up in his fluffy coat, drinking a Coke.
Right. So then they marketed it so hard that people just thought Coke invented it.
Yeah. It just went, it was like that was... That then became, okay, yeah, Santa, I'm thinking of the Coke ads
right
in the 30s.
And before that, Santa Claus was in green as well. They had a few different colors where I think after the popularity of that was when it was stuck. Like,
yeah, that was like, that is his color
red and
now.
White.
Yeah.
Crazy, cool. Man. So yeah, like, so 1901, we made him red.
What about 1901?
Dane's claimed it. He's
like,
that was us.
I want to know this. I want to know.
There was a few that had like red as part of the outfits, but I don't know if you've got the article there, Cabe. If you want to look it up, it's the first one in the list where you're like, oh, that's Santa. They then saw that opportunity of going, okay, we've seen Santa in red before. Let's capitalize off this. And again, public domain. No one owns Santa to be like, sorry, you can't use Santa in your marketing. But yeah, that commercialized it. And then I guess... talking to what we were saying before with Christmas ticking off all the boxes, you then come back to they have a mascot.
Right.
You know, they've got everything that can make you think of a brand and own that idea in your head.
So you're telling me this year we could collab with Santa? We can make him orange.
We could do a skit of Santa and Sherlock Holmes, and Sherlock Holmes tells him to fuck off, and then it's fine.
And Winnie the Pooh.
and Winnie the Pooh comes in. And that's our ad for Arrival.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'd love that.
Sherlock we'll Holmes show you how to get around this. Yeah. We'll yeah. show you how to take popular names.
So, it has to be mean Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, mean old dirty Sherlock Holmes. All right, so Christmas. Let's look at Christmas as a brand. It has a color suite. It has a font family. Mm-hmm. What does Christmas mean? To me, it means joy, happiness, giving, merriness. Like, it has a feeling, it has a message, it has a story. It kind of hits all the notes of what a brand is.
Yeah. It also still means winter and snow, even though we don't get that here. That's how strong the brand is.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you like, we're here in Australia, like, let it snow, let it snow. It's like, well, no, it's not. Yeah, but it's really Christmas, hot. So I'm going to listen to this anyway.
Seen
like,
snow and I jam out to that.
I think the other thing I found really interesting about Christmas is, you know, once you start considering that as a brand, it does then show that segue between branding converting to sales, right? Because Christmas is the time of the year where people spend the most amount of money ever.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of money that gets thrown around at Christmas is wild. And if Christmas didn't exist as we knew it, and then someone just said, hey, we're going to pick this day, and on that day, I reckon you should just buy all your mates and your family gifts and just spend heaps of money and like pay to decorate your house, you'd be like, no,
yeah,
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But because there's been this whole world building around the Christmas brand, everyone's like, yeah, I'm in for that.
Yeah.
I'm immersed in this experience. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to bring it back, these are the pictures.
Oh, you found it?
Of old Santa.
OG Santa.
Old Santa. OG. Yeah, look at him there. So you wouldn't recognize that as Santa.
It's very holy looking.
Domain expansion.
Hand signals.
Okay. Then he's got his little beard popping off. He's got a bit of a coat beard happening.
He's got the boys in the back waiting.
Santa and the boys.
That's Santa on his podcast.
Starting to do a bit of magic.
When did he start? When did they rebrand him to climb down chimneys?
When did that happen?
Like, you know what Santa's like missing? Era. A bit of breaking and entering.
Still the B&E. But it's cool.
There you go. He's yellow. But that's the first one where I was like, okay, ignoring the color, it kind of looks like Santa. If you color that red,
he's got this.
That makes sense.
No other word for it than Santa.
All right, red.
So this was the first like red inclusion, but he's got the green hat. Like it's
when's
starting
this?
To introduce the Christmas characters.
This is the first one that feels Christmassy to me.
1986?
Yeah. As what we 68? Know as Christmas.
Yeah. What 19, we associate.
1868. Before Sherlock Holmes.
Yep. There you go.
Oh, he's getting happier. That's a bit.
Well, that's where you're looking very jolly.
To put it, yeah.
Pretty Santa-y.
That's like based on Gandalf, essentially.
I don't know what's in his pipe.
Or Gandalf's based off Santa, dude.
Oh. There you go. Oh, yeah, it was before.
Oh, here's the chimney day.
Yeah. So this was by L. Frank Baum, who did Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
So it shows the same sort of style. Cool. Then I think it's the next one. Yeah, that. This is the first where I'm like, Santa.
But the chimney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The I know chimney what you mean. One, yeah. This is like the modern Santa.
So this is 1901 in Australia.
Yeah. Well, this just proves a point, like as culture grows and evolves and shifts, like so too does like your brand need to kind of go with it.
Yeah,
you
for
know.
Sure.
So whether you,
but I would also argue that Christmas got so big that it no longer. I don't think you could rebrand Christmas now. It is beyond anyone rebranding it.
The only thing I would debate is like you are seeing people shorten it to like Xmas. Or they're changing.
That's true.
I don't know. I've seen this recently where for marketing campaigns, people are taking the word Christ out of it and then they're messing with other ways of saying it to be more inclusive or whatever.
Yeah.
That's been kind of a slow push in the last like
happy
15.
Holidays.
I
think that's also because people are lazy and typing Xmas is quicker.
As a designer, if you have to write the word Christmas, it's a long word. It doesn't look as poppy on design.
It's
but
like a massive X.
Oh, it's got silent letters in there. I mean, who needs those anyway, you know?
Cabe and I were jamming out on this when we were talking about this because you lived in Japan. Cabe told me the craziest thing about Christmas in Japan and how their Christmas is probably more about KFC than anything else.
Look, Japanese Christmas, I think 1% of the population is Christian. They have zero religious connotation to the holiday.
Right.
It's essentially, if you put Valentine's Day at the end of the year, that's essentially what Christmas is. It's more about hanging out with your loved one. Right. Not family, more girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife.
Okay. Wow. So it's not about children?
It started as originally, I think it was 1960 was when Japan started getting more open to the Western world. It's after World War II stuff is happening.
Yep,
right. They're needing to pivot. A lot of the kids are seeing, I guess, Western countries having their Christmas, and it's like, oh, they've got nice cakes and gifts, whatever. Mm. So they started, a lot of companies started going down the route of, oh, have a cake for Christmas, selling cakes, selling all these things. KFC then came to Japan in 1970.
Mm.
And I believe the head marketer for KFC heard an American say, I wish I could have my turkey. But I'll settle for this chicken instead. And that was what essentially sparked.
And so Colonel Santa was invented.
That's Colonel what Santa. Sparked, Colonel I guess, the pivot from it being a children's holiday.
Yeah.
Originally it was, okay, give the kids gifts, but they didn't care about anything else. It was just like, okay, keep the kids happy.
Yeah.
After KFC realized that, they pivoted and they started adding wine to their Christmas box.
Oh.
Wow.
Bringing Wait, KFC in, add alcohol?
Yes.
So do they ID check?
It's
Look,
Japan.
It's Japan. There's no ID checks.
Wow.
When I first went there, it was impossible for the first, I guess, 3 months before Christmas, you could not get it. You would go in to order your chicken and they'll be like, yeah, we're sold out for Christmas.
Like, well, 3 months in advance.
3 months in advance.
Wow.
It may have gone even further. I know that when COVID hit, they did pivot their... I guess their methods to online a lot more.
Right.
Mm.
So it has gotten better. I've been doing my research and there's not as much of a wait, but they still do recommend at least a month before.
A month.
Would you
pre-ordering chicken? That just seems so weird.
Man, KFC's just like figured this whole game out in Japan. So would you say that other like from your experience, you know how the way in Australia every company kind of jumps on the Christmas bandwagon for promotions and marketing? Does that happen in Japan?
Yeah, so I'll show you this. As I said, Japan, they have no actual connection to the holiday. So it's purely consumer. This is what Japan looks like.
Whoa.
Coming up to Christmas.
Man, they go all out.
They go fucking all out. Every shop has Christmas music. Every shop has Christmas themes. The entire 7-Eleven convenience stores, they'll change their I guess, food menus to include Christmas foods, to have everything red and white, adding Christmas to literally everything. And they do that with Halloween too.
Dude, Australia invented Santa and we don't go this time. What is happening?
Modern Santa, yeah.
All of October, the streets are covered in pumpkins, candy. Like, it's very Halloween. Mm. The second it hits November, boom, it changes.
Really?
I remember going on the 1st of November, which is my birthday, to Universal Studios. Mm-hmm. And they were packing down the Halloween and setting up Christmas. So it was like Christmas trees everywhere with zombies walking around them. Like, oh, this is probably the perfect day to go, actually.
Yeah.
Best of both worlds.
I had a mate who did that in Anaheim. They went over to California and booked 2 days at Disneyland. 4 days apart, but one was in October to get the Halloween Disneyland, and then one was the beginning of November to get Christmas Disneyland.
Oh, that's great. It's completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different vibe.
Well, that's a good point. Like, I would always go to here on the Gold Coast. We've got Dreamworld and we've got...
Is it Screamworld when they do Halloween?
Yeah, they rebrand it to Screamworld and everything's like... Halloween themes.
Movie World Fright Nights is the best one.
Oh, okay, so yeah, Scream World and Movie World Fright Night.
Yeah,
they kind of. It's so funny because they're across the road from each other and they're just like Halloween off.
But yeah. I think because Movie World do movies, right?
Like, makes sense.
It's actually got a backlot of filming. Like the production quality.
They did it first, wild. Then Dream World were like, they're making so much money.
Yeah,
like steal that. Yeah. But I remember going to Movie World. You can look this up on the Gold Coast. You would walk in and you would walk down like the main alleyway of like where all the shops were, and there'd be smoke machines pouring smoke out in the streets.
Mm.
People chasing you with chain stores and everything. But this is it here. But they would commercialize it so well that they would make like record ticket sales over the 2 weeks that they were doing this.
Mm. Yeah, they would have made so much. I've been 2 years, and both times I've flown to the Gold Coast specifically for it. Mm. I am a massive Halloween nerd. I've been excited to talk about Halloween on this podcast because that's my thing.
That's all the time we have.
That's it. I've been a couple of times specifically for this, and they like you'd think that you get there and it's like, oh, I'm going to go do my horror mazes and then go on a ride. It's like everywhere is themed. You can't escape it. There's probably, I reckon there was at least 500 actors there, like in character. Then they've got like all the drinks are served in blood bag cocktails and stuff. And it's the whole thing is themed. But again, it ties back to that branding, right? They've just taken the branding of Halloween and used that. It's public domain. No one owns Halloween. So they went, let's capitalize off it. Everyone wants to be immersed in this brand experience for October.
The interesting thing about like the Halloween thing and the Christmas thing is like, would you say that like, you know how brands have like sub brands? Mm-hmm. Like if you look at Christmas, there's versions of Christmas. You have the Christian Christmas,
right?
Which is probably, I might be butchering this, but again, we promise not to talk about religion on the pod, but I'm just going to go down the rabbit hole. But like, I think Christmas, from what I understand, which was there's the tree at least comes from a pagan element, and then you have the Christ elements and all the rest of it. But like, it's just strange to me how something kind of originates as like a local ceremonial event.
Right.
Has been modernized and commercialized to the point where Japan doesn't even think about any of that. And it's just purely a commercialized part of the year where companies are just pumping it into the marketplace.
On that note, Japan and Christmas is the most depressing.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because it's...
If you don't have a girlfriend or boyfriend, it's sad, or like it's like a Valentine's thing?
I had a girlfriend at the time, but it was more so I know what Christmas is like in Australia.
Right. It's about family, children, togetherness.
I was at work. I was working until 12 o'clock at night on Christmas night.
Yeah. But was that your experience, Cape? Or like was it?
No, that's just because it's not a public holiday. It's not thought of as like important.
It's like a commercial celebration, but it's
completely commercial. Would you take a day off for Valentine's Day?
Nah.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's almost like it felt like a Valentine's Day and it made you sad.
Yeah, well, it was because I would see all these photos being in Japan of my friends and family having lovely dinners.
You weren't having the full brand experience. Yeah. Exactly. You were having an off-brand experience.
I was having an off-brand experience. I felt like there was no jolliness. It was just...
The messaging was wrong. Yeah. The visuals were there.
Visuals were better than ever.
But the messaging and the storytelling and the experience wasn't there.
They weren't using the brand guide correctly.
They weren't using the brand guide correctly.
Maybe we can solve this problem. We might make an official global brand guide for Christmas. Yeah. And Japan can just
Let's do all the holidays.
Yeah.
I'm doing a Halloween brand guide. I'm making myself the Halloween mascot.
Yeah. I would buy that.
Me dressed up every year.
You always have the wildest costumes every year. But let's move into Halloween. Let's look at, James Bond's a brand.
Yep.
Christmas is a brand, clearly. We just need to fix the brand guide. We invented it. I'm claiming it. And Halloween.
You mentioned Christmas being, you know, taking old school, taking like stories and
there's an origin. History.
There's an origin.
Ceremonious.
And it gets commercialized.
Community. Yeah, it gets commercialized.
I was looking into Halloween. I didn't realize how far back that dates.
Really?
Like when would you say the idea of Halloween was first sparked?
1536.
I'm gonna say
Dennis is right. Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, I was going to say like Roman times, dude.
Yeah, AD. Like we're talking AD.
Whoa.
Well, if this is AD.
Can you look that up? That's crazy, man.
Yeah, I did some research on it before. It came from a Celtic festival called Samhain.
How do you spell that?
Not how you would think. Samhain.
That's what I thought.
But yes, it was. So traditionally back then, it was one day where they felt that the gate between worlds was opened up and let spirits in.
That's still kind of...
That's cool.
Here.
Yeah.
But that originates with the Celtics.
Yeah. So it came from the Celtics. And to commemorate that day, they would have ceremonies where they would put masks on and then they would burn stock and animals and stuff as a sacrifice to the gods to protect themselves from the spirits coming between worlds, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
But that was the first sort of storytelling of the masks and why people got dressed up for Halloween. It dated right back to as part of these ceremonies. They would wear masks. And then as time went on, people started to commercialize that idea of getting dressed up and making that more of a creative feature.
Right. So in a way, it's kind of like, weirdly enough, we've kind of bastardized these very beautiful human-centric things in the world and just made them into commercialized
capitalism.
Marketing. Yeah, capitalism, man. This is kind of rough.
Into capitalism.
This one specific is a bit darker than Christmas.
Yeah. Man, true. Imagine if you could go back in time and just watch that event play out in the Celtics. It would have been an experience.
Yeah, probably a little scary, but yeah.
Terrifying. I mean, Halloween's supposed to be scary, but it's now like fun actor scary.
Yeah. Now it's like, oh, it's scary. Back it's then, it's like, scary. Let's it's sacrifice
like,
no, things.
It's like,
yeah.
I got to make a sick outfit so I can flaunt it on TikTok.
Yeah. Like, go do some sacrifices.
Exactly. So when did it kind of take off in like the Americanized version of the brands?
I actually think it was quite early. I want to say 1600s, maybe. Dennis. What's the
1536? I'd say
2024. There you go. That's when it was created.
No.
No, but it's the same as anything, right? It's just progressed over time. And I think people latch onto specific elements. And it's something that people do in rebrands as well, right? You take these heritage things, you take the elements that people like, the things
you
that
modernize them.
Onto, you modernize
you make
it.
Make them relevant.
Yeah. Connective. It progresses with the times and there's things that stick. Like Halloween, you think of the colors now. It's like if someone says Halloween, people are probably going to think of orange and purple as the brand colors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that stuck for many, many years.
I wonder where the pumpkin came from. Because I think like the whole concept of the pumpkins almost become the icon logo or like if you think
part
about
of their iconography suite.
Yeah, there you go. Like, and there's obviously, you know, movies have played a giant role in Halloween as well as Christmas, I guess. So, you know, if you would look at Halloween similarly to Christmas, it's been another commercialized thing that's become a brand.
I read a very fun statistic before and my mind was blown as far as progressing the holiday with the times and what people are interested in. People have been dressing up for many, many years. Now people love to dress up their pets. Mm. I'm one of those people. Elfie made a great vampire for Halloween. But how much money do you think is spent? And this statistic
was
from...
We'll put a photo of Alfie up on the screen.
Please.
FYI. Yeah.
Please. She deserves the attention.
Yeah.
She loves the attention. How much do you think was spent in 2021, 3 years ago, on Halloween costumes for pets?
Oh, man. Globally?
I actually think it was just in America.
At least 12 grand.
I'm gonna take a wild stab at this. I think it's in the tens of millions. I'm gonna say 86 million.
I'm gonna say 386 million.
I'm gonna go 44 million.
Cam knows. I've sent him the stuff.
Oh, you don't get to play.
Cam was about to drop the number and be like, bang on. 500 million.
No. Jesus.
Half a bill.
On Halloween costumes for pets. Half a billion dollars.
Guys, if you're hearing this, you need to start a brand.
Also, to put this in perspective.
Just make Halloween.
I buy pet costumes for Halloween from Kmart for $2.
Yeah.
Think of how many $2 pet costumes.
Yeah. I think at least 200 million is my mom. My dog's got more clothes.
Dude, that's
than me.
That's crazy. Wow.
That's wild, right?
So, okay, like here's a debate then. Like how much do you think maybe... If you look at the big brands like Coca-Cola and so on, they for sure jump on these events to produce additional revenue for their corporations.
Yeah.
If someone's a small to medium-sized startup brand, like, do you think it's a worthwhile endeavor for them to kind of try to do a collab with Halloween? and like, do you think it's a crucial thing for them to capitalize on that to generate an attention and all the rest of it? Or do you think it's an optional thing?
I think it depends on your audience. It depends on what you do.
Right.
We worked with a brand.
Like if you're a law firm, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. We worked with a brand in Miami called Fit and Go Pets, who
I remember.
Are amazing. Such a fun brand to work on. And as you know, they're essentially holistic pet care for when you go away, you leave your dog there. It's like a doggy daycare, but more fun. And I think that was the perfect holiday for them to capitalize off. We did some graphics for them around like dress your dogs in their Halloween costume. Mm. And, you know, if your industry
cute.
Allows
we'll put pictures
for
up.
It. Yeah. If you're yeah. If your industry allows for you to tap into those holidays, then absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd be missing out on an opportunity.
And we've done this with brand kits that we've built where we've done like event extensions of their brands. So for example, Culture Kings has like an extension of how their brand operates and acts and behaves during Halloween. So weirdly enough, like there are agencies like ourselves that create add-on kits to standard brand kits for Christmas, for Halloween. We do know like giant events like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Saint Laurent, LVMH brands are doing this.
And I think that comes back to the strength of the brand of Christmas and the brand of Halloween, right? And that if Christmas didn't have a strong brand and you wanted to do a rival Christmas post, you'd just make it orange because you're like, well, we decide how that looks. But if we say Merry Christmas and it's this orange graphic with ripped stickers and pie sticks, people will be like, then it doesn't look like Christmas.
Even though you're using the rival brand, the Christmas takes over.
Yeah. Their brand is so strong that if you want to promote Christmas, you have to make it red and green.
Otherwise, it's not a collab.
Yeah. You replace your colors with Christmas colors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It trumps every other brand. Like it comes in and it stomps out yours. And if you want to use it, you can, but it's a collaboration post.
Yeah. So did Nike ever collab with Christmas? I want to know.
And it's strange because you, when you think collabing with Christmas, who benefits?
Yeah.
I guess you do.
You know,
Christmas is not gonna. Yeah, but Christmas is not gonna get money.
But it gets to grow its brand.
But
who is that? Yeah. Yeah, there would be people that argue Christmas isn't a brand because there's no one at the head of
Santa.
It. Santa.
Man's getting free branding.
Yeah.
I don't think they've done a collab per se with Christmas. But
Nike hasn't done a Christmas collab.
Whether these shoes are real or not, I don't know.
Would you rock them?
I'd rock those.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the season.
I like it.
I'd rep that.
Hell
yeah, dude. Tis the season. What I'm wearing, man. Of course I wear that.
But you always wear your bright colors.
Yeah,
that's on brand for you.
On brand. It is.
I gotta say on brand.
They're blending with the couch. I like it.
Dude, Nike could do a sick ad with Santa wearing a pair of sneaks.
Don't give him ideas for free.
Thank you for hearing this.
Yeah.
Surely they've already done that.
Let's talk.
Just run into people's houses instead of the sled.
Yeah.
Sporty Santa.
Yeah.
Speaking of sporty Santa, would you say sports are a brand?
like sports, like give me an example.
I'm going to use Dennis here. Purely because his name rhymes with tennis. Not because he likes tennis or anything.
Nah. Right. I like it a little. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, just the idea of sports in general is kind of a brand. Well, you think of soccer or football, your mind immediately goes to maybe the World Cup or a player like Messi, and then it just has extensions of that brand. So people can benefit from attaching themselves to it. Just like I was saying, if someone attaches themselves to Christmas, but if their whole brand is about Christmas, then whenever you think of Christmas, you might think of this brand. But there's just never been a more powerful brand. Whereas soccer, because it's so broad, you think Messi, and Messi's or Ronaldo are bigger than soccer. So you think immediately you've got that as a brand. And some people I think maybe might not consciously think about it. I mean, I didn't when I was younger. I didn't think, oh, soccer's a brand. You think soccer, you think World Cup. True. You think tennis, you think Grand Slams, you think Australia, London, Paris.
There's clothing labels that are based off soccer apparel, and you see that and you're like, I have an affiliation with soccer, so I would wear that.
Exactly. Like the players' names on the back. You just think of soccer.
I guess there's like multiple personal brands within a brand.
Exactly.
That's
the biggest one, I'd say. Sports is the biggest one where it has a collection. So it's not just a personal brand, but it's a team. You've got the coaches, you've got the managers. At this stage, people know the managers, they know the team, they even know the owners of the team.
Right.
Like it's become more and more of a brand.
Well, let me just interject for just a quick second. Like if you look at, let's say Marvel.
Right.
Would you say Marvel is a brand?
Yes. The biggest in the world maybe at this point.
And here's the point I'm trying to make. Like if Marvel is essentially, Marvel's a universe conceptually.
Yeah.
And there's like brands within it. You got all these different characters within that universe, but then the universe in and of itself is also a brand. So would you say sports kind of act a similar way where, you know, like the FIFA World Cup is like the Marvel and then all these characters are kind of like their own sub or personal brands within that ecosystem.
I would say so. Same with other things like tennis where it's less so, where you think of tennis, you might think of a country, you might think of, depending on where you are in the world, you might think, oh, tennis is Australia.
Or you think NASCAR, you think
America.
America.
You think like Wimbledon with London or something. But yeah, with soccer, you think the world. I think that's probably the big one.
On that note with tennis, just because I don't know much about tennises in general, but are they all
tennises?
Yeah, he did. I didn't want to correct him.
Tennises. Ten eye, plural.
Ten eye.
Two tennis.
There is multiple. all the Grand Slams owned by like one company, and not owned, but are they all?
They're all under one federation, the ITF.
So it is
really,
yeah. To like which FIFA. Is. But some people also don't know because the normal matches, you think of Masters tournaments or anything, they're owned by a different company, whereas Grand Slam they're owned by somebody else completely. So they can't, like, let's say you have the Australian Open, they can't post about matches that aren't Grand Slams, and the other non-Grand Slams can't post anything about Grand Slam matches because they're two different brands.
Wow. Let me ask you a question. So would you say that these guys are in a war with each other?
100%, yeah.
And like, yeah, okay. Dude, I'm getting educated here, but like, okay, give me like the top 3 to 5 federations within tennis.
So you've got the ITF, which is the International Tennis Federation, and they have both men and women. But then on separate, you've got the ATP, which is the men for everything else. And you've got the WTA, which is everything else for women.
Right.
And they always, like, they guess, they try and work together. But, I mean, even as close as, like, let's say COVID, when they banned certain players from not playing, right. Then the ITF was like, okay, well, the ATP does the rankings. And they're like, okay, well, we won't allow you to have points, no ranking points at your Grand Slam. So they essentially just fought each other. And they're like, you don't want to do this? Okay, you can't have points at this Grand Slam.
What do you mean by points?
So let's say you win a Grand Slam, you get ranking points. So you can be number one
and,
in the world.
And that goes to like your world ranking.
Yes.
So okay. Regardless
if it's these different federations.
Yeah. They work together.
Kind of so, like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
This person's number one over there. We'll give them some points.
Yeah. So at the ATP does the ranking. So whenever you think of like who's all the WTA.
Who's the best tennis player?
Yeah, like Novak Djokovic. You think, okay, he's the ATP world number one. Even though he plays a Grand Slam, which is for the ITF, they count the points to the ATP.
Right, they collaborate.
And Wimbledon decided not to let Russian players play.
Right.
And so ATP was like, okay, well, now you can't have points at that Grand Slam.
Yeah.
So they were like, we do not recognize you for this year.
So it fucks it all up.
Yeah, they were essentially like, and the whole ranking system was destroyed for that year, and it caused a massive controversy. And
who's best, because
everyone can count. They can be like, well, he won 2,000 points there, but it doesn't count, which means somebody else is number one.
Right.
Yeah. And the whole thing with that was that because they did that, a Russian player became number one, which is that their whole point was to not let them play, but because he lost points, he became number one.
All right.
So it's that kind of thing where they did fight each other
as
brands. So you think like people wouldn't think like, okay, tennis has a brand, but it does. It has like 3 or 4 really big ones and they all fight each other for who's the most important one.
Well, this is an interesting point. And the point I'm trying to make here is like, you know, you would think about tennis as an industry as like it's one cohesive industry, but it's not like Formula One where it's under one federation.
Yeah.
These guys are all, because it's such an international sport and it's so easy to, I guess, play it as a child and kind of, you know, it's really hard to get an F1, for example. Yeah. But like,
very rich sport.
Yeah, rich people sport. But like, would you say like tennis and these brands, they're in a constant battle to try to outbrand each other?
I think so. I mean, they sometimes benefit from pushing each other up.
Yeah.
But when it comes to certain things with like, oh, I don't agree with what you do there, then they try and one up each other.
Well, what's the reputational difference between those ones?
The difference is that I don't think anyone really knows the ITF, which is the Grand Slams. A lot of people, like you'll see a lot of Instagram comments for all the ATP stuff, which is the regular tournaments. Everyone's like, why don't you post about the Australian Open? And they're like, we don't have the rights. And no one knows. Because ATP is the majority of the year.
Yeah.
Whereas Grand Slams is 2 weeks. There are 4 times a year. Yep. And so people don't know that the ITF really exists.
Okay.
So they need to pump up their brand more.
Yeah. Yeah. And then with soccer, like what are all the different federations in soccer?
In soccer, they have each country has their own.
Yeah.
Oh, so okay. Yeah, the Premier League in England.
Right.
You've got the A-League in Australia.
Yeah.
You've got the Bundesliga in Germany, and they all have their own, and they're not connected really.
Right.
Like they can play with each other, so there'll be a European federation. That's where the Champions League is.
Yeah.
So all the European country, all the European teams fight to play the Champions League.
And what about the FIFA World Cup?
That's every country.
That's international.
That's every country.
That's a collaboration of all the countries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everyone puts their best team forward or?
Well, everyone has one team.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And then they play the qualifiers.
Okay.
And then the qualifiers go and they were able to play the tournament.
Is that similar to the Olympics where everyone kind of makes up their national team?
Yeah.
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 With members from other teams.
Essentially, yeah. Whereas in the normal day-to-day like gymnastics tournaments, they versus each other. And then for the Olympics, they're like, okay, all the world championships, they're like, we're a team.
Yeah.
Which in the World Cup
I don't hate you anymore.
Yeah. In the World Cup, it's weird. That's why a team like England is always kind of just so close or they were really bad at the World Cup is because... the Premier League is so competitive and they hate each other. And then they're like, okay, go play in a team together, and they hate each other. So it's like, it's that kind of stuff where, yeah, where soccer does have a massive sort of appeal in terms of their brand, a massive reach where it's so just too different.
Would you say that, like, the way I'm looking at it, like, if we're coming back to the question of, like, is it a brand? Mm. Like, clearly these federations are brands, yes, and then the players within them are brands. Yep. Would you say the sport in and of itself is a brand?
I would say yes, and it's almost kind of like Christmas, where it is a brand, but who benefits from soccer in general? Mm-hmm. I would say that the things it has a hands on. So Christmas, you'd say it's a brand, right? But there's no one at the helm, but everyone who uses Christmas benefits. Mm. Same with soccer.
Mm.
It's like, you know, you pick up a ball, you kick it around. It's like, who really benefits? Eventually, that person who kicks the ball around might play for the Premier League and make the millions of dollars.
Right.
They benefit.
Who establishes that brand? Like, if you think of a soccer ball and it's traditionally black and white, right? With the, is it hexagons? I'm going to say hexagons. But like, you know, that's now formed the icon of, like, that represents soccer.
Mm.
But I don't think anyone has that trademarked, because anyone can make a soccer ball in that color.
That's why now the World Cup trophy is what represents soccer. Yeah. It's because the World Cup, FIFA can own that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So they've made something that they can own.
Exactly. It's the trophy. Yeah. That made that's soccer. That's the pinnacle of soccer. It's not the ball anymore.
Yeah.
But I guess on the other side, it's something that has so much power that it kind of becomes its own entity.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, over the history of soccer, there's been an atmosphere that's been built. There's been a kind of, I guess, what you would consider rude or what you would consider normal and polite within soccer. Mm-hmm. And that continues on to this day. Same with tennis.
Mm.
There's rules that are very different to soccer in tennis, not the actual game rules, but like the viewing rules and like the, I guess, what's considered okay to
the
do.
Audience.
The audience.
The audience as a brand in itself.
Mm.
Back in the day with tennis, you think in Wimbledon, in London, the brand is that the audience is quiet.
Mm.
They're not allowed to speak.
They're well-dressed.
They're very well-dressed. They're all very rich, because it costs so much to go to Wimbledon. Whereas in soccer, you're constantly screaming, and that is the brand of the audience. You go to soccer. Like, I've been to matches where I wasn't like singing and people like tried to fight me. They were like, you need to start singing. And I was like, well, I don't have the lyrics.
Like, this is the brand.
Yeah. They were like, this is
where's the sheet music?
Yeah, no, you say that, but I was like, I don't know the words. And a guy was like, oh, so sorry, dude. And he went, a minute later came back with the lyrics on a piece of paper. And he's like, you're all right, man.
Like, so it's like handwritten on a napkin. Yeah. This guy just really needs to
he
be
He just
in
went
this.
From 100 to zero. He's like, you're going to ruin this. He's like, you tried to fight me. Yeah. And then he's like, all right, here you go.
So it's like a subconscious thing that people know when they go to the game, because it's not like you walk into a game and get handed a brand guide of like, this is how you must respond to be a part of the brand that is soccer.
But people will help you stay on brand.
Well, this is where it's like, it comes into, well, what is a brand identity?
Yeah.
And what is your expectation, right? So if you're looking at soccer as an identity, it's like, you're kind of expected to cheer and get into it and sing or get in a fight.
Yeah.
and then with tennis, it's more like, you know, it feels more like not slower pace, but it's a different cultural association with what the sport represents.
And it's good that you bring that up, because there are tournaments, like there's a Davis Cup, which is the World Cup in tennis, where it is expected that you do shout and scream.
Oh, really?
It's the only tournament where that is accepted.
Yeah.
Everything else, you have to be quiet.
Yeah.
People aren't quiet, but they're expected to be, at least.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is as well pretty interesting, because as a brand, people think, oh, tennis is quiet, but then there's one tournament where it's not quiet.
Yeah.
And again, that doesn't really involve the players, but it involves the people, involves the perception of it. And it's like, because people think it's a gentleman's sport, but people that go there just get drunk and yell.
I think sport is a good example of where tradition can then blur into becoming a brand.
Yes.
Like, if you think of, you know, every sport has its recognizable ball.
There's design of, like, you think about basketball, you think of orange and the black lines and the wooden floors. And if you think of each sport, you get a hit of visual stimuli that you kind of use as an iconic or symbolic reference.
And that would have just come from tradition. Like, basketballs were traditionally orange. I can't tell you the reason why, but now that's what people recognize as basketball.
Yes.
You know, tennis balls being green, yellow, whatever color you want to call it. It's a debate that we'll have later.
I think if you extract like the common thread through all of this, for me, it's always making sure whatever you're doing, whether it's a business or a personal brand, it's how do you make sure it's relevant to the market? right? Because every year, you know, whether you're in Japan and you feel lonely, or or you're in Australia or you're in the US, like Christmas probably morphs into a slightly different formula to be more relevant to where it is.
Yes.
So I think branding always has to be relevant to the local markets where you're trying to position yourself in the minds of people. It needs to be recognizable with imagery outside of just an icon, right? You think about tennis, you think about the white outfits, you think about the shoes, Wimbledon, the shorts, you think about the blue court, you think about the tent. Like there's so much symbology. And I think for me, it's like recognition, being able to identify what a thing is, being able to feel like it's relevant to you. And then also there's a story being told, there's a cultural element I can participate in, right? So when you were in Japan, you were like, dude, I don't feel like I'm connecting to the culture. Whereas you wished you were in Australia so you could kind of inject yourself into that cultural attachment. So yeah, if we just kind of package this up, I feel like, you know, branding in all of these different formats is just like asking yourself the question is what I'm doing relevant in connecting with people? Is it visually stimulating, not just with a logo and a color palette? Is there additional elements?
I would add, what am I owning in people's minds?
That's a good one. Yes.
How do you leverage it?
Yeah. How do you, like, you have to know what you're owning so that you can place it in the right places, right?
Yeah.
Like everything we've spoken about today, Christmas is owning warmth and family and Santa Claus and the color red and green. Tennis is owning the shape of the ball, the color of the ball. It's owning, like Dane said, the white outfits. It's owning the, you know, the mood that it sets when you come to the space. Like
atmosphere.
Yeah.
And think about how much these mean to us, right? Because, you know, we're always making fun of brands saying things like, we want to be trustworthy and we're innovative and we speak with authenticity because no one hears care the word about you, the customer.
One says trustworthy and someone's like, trustworthy? That makes me think of this brand.
Thank God you said it. Now I trust you.
It's like saying, I'm not a scammer.
Trust me. I think it's also just that ownability factor. Like you can't own trustworthy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if someone says to you, oh, you know, espionage in a suit, you go, I'm thinking of James Bond.
Yeah.
But if someone says to you trustworthy, you're not like, ah, yes, like this bank. Like, that's really just made
me think. It's not like I'm going to go go to an Aston Martin car yard and look at an Aston Martin and be like, man, this is so cool. But you know what? I don't trust James Bond.
They didn't tell me to trust them. So.
Yeah.
Damn it.
It doesn't say trustworthy on the car. So.
Ah, James Bond is really authentic. He's a spy. I can't trust the guy. I just can't buy this vehicle.
But that is interesting because you said trustworthy and I was like, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, exactly. Because if someone says they're it doesn't stick in your head. Yeah. You're not like, the one thing I remember about them is they told me to trust them. So I do that for life.
I dare anyone listening to this, find a real example in the world where a brand says they're trustworthy and you believe them.
Yeah.
Prove it.
Yeah.
The point I really want to drill home here is like, if you're building a brand, those are what we call the vanilla values. Like stay away from them. If you look at Christmas, it's about merriness, connectivity, warmth, joy, and like sharing things together.
Just to clarify too, this doesn't mean you can't be trustworthy. Like this isn't saying...
You don't have to say it.
Trust is generic. Yeah. Be a bit dodgy.
Lies,
you know?
Steal, cheat.
I'm not implying anyone. But you don't need to have it as like your North Star. Like it's almost
it's like kind of like bare minimum, right?
It's like expected from a human. Like, yeah, of course, like you're in business, so I should trust you.
So we're going to do our job. It's like, well, you probably should.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like walking up to someone. Hi, nice to meet you. I've actually never murdered someone.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Thank God you told me that.
It's like, now I'm so sus on you.
Okay. Yeah. So visual stimuli, staying away from generic vanilla stuff. Like each of these things we've talked about, James Bond, you know, Christmas.
And there's so many more that we haven't spoken about in this. Like one of the things we briefly touched on when we were chatting about it internally was cities.
Yes.
Like Las Vegas, countries, Paris. Yeah. Countries have brands. One of the things that we were talking about earlier today, I put the question to the design team. I said, what else do you guys think is a brand? They mentioned furniture styles. Like, you know, there's a brand for mid-century modern and there's certain fonts you think of when you think of Art Deco in that era. Even like subcultures, like if you think of goths, Gothic is a brand.
That's true.
True.
Yeah, like nerd culture is a brand.
Yeah,
you know, 100%. There's just think, so many
you
things.
You say nerd, you think glasses, gelled hair.
Right, yeah, exactly. There's right. things that owns in your mind.
No offense if you have glasses, gelled hair. Yeah. No beef.
So yeah, imagine you wore a light blue hat.
but yeah, it's like even worse. Like, imagine it's crinkled. Yeah.
I blame the straight up.
Yeah.
Drop a comment if there's something you think is a brand that we haven't spoken about. That,
yeah.
And obviously not the obvious. Like, there's many, many brands. Don't drop a comment and say, I think Coca-Cola is one of those.
Go for it.
Yeah. You can debate us all day long because we get comments, I mean,
you can
we
drop
get
the
engagement.
Comment. Yeah. Yeah.
Traction in you the can algorithm. Do that,
but yeah, what's something you find interesting as not a, you know, something that everybody commercially knows
yeah.
is a brand?
And why yeah. is it tennis?
Yeah.